I'm opening.
We have
an eye, sort of a nostril, two teeth. One of the teeth has a small cavity. Close call, folks, but I think we got here just in time.
Presented by Maria Menounos and Kevin Undergaro. This is Anatomy of a Movie. In-depth discussions and breakdowns of various movie titles. And now that you've seen the movie, let the dissection begin.
Welcome, everybody. Thank you for joining us for another Anatomy of a Movie. This week's Operation Bad Words. I'm John Comerford. I'm joined in the studio by Sir Stratton.
Hello, everybody.
Dimitri Panos.
Hello.
And in the booth humming for us is Marissa Serafini.
Hello, everyone.
Oh, yes. So, do we have bad words for this, or do we only have kind things to say?
I will say that it was definitely a good movie. It was very fun. I can see that through the fact that it made me so uncomfortable so many times. Uh-huh. Like, also, I should point out that a spelling bee was probably my worst fear.
Oh, really? Wow.
As a kid. Okay. I hate
it. Which part? The getting up in front of people or the spelling or both?
Spelling. Mostly spelling. Like, still to this day, like, if you ask me to spell something out loud, mm-hmm. it's so hard for me. I, like, get lost track.
Arch your brain.
Yeah, I think I have, like, very, very minor dyslexia where I'll just, like, switch my letters around, switch my words around. So spelling bee, putting up, having to stand up there and, like, say something. Oh, my gosh. Terrifying. Uh-huh. Literally, it made me scared at certain parts of the movie. I felt so bad for them. And then on top of that, uh-huh. I guess maybe I've just never been a big user of bad words. Uh-huh. And I was just like, oh, children. Stop.
Yeah. And then two children in front of children, at children. Yes.
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 But it was funny and it was good. And like, I, part of me was like, oh no. But then I was like laughing and I'm like, I'm a horrible person. I should not be laughing at this. This is awful. But it was a lot of fun to watch.
Me too.
I really like this fucking movie.
There you go. That's it. The gauntlet has been thrown.
And you just made this podcast nice. Explicit.
There you go. Wait till I read a quote from this movie.
I
big fan. Mm-hmm. I really like this movie a lot. I thought it was a very smart script. And I had a really good time. It had laughs. It went to places that I didn't think mm-hmm. it could go, or I've never seen go before. Mm-hmm. I didn't feel uncomfortable. I was just laughing at the brazen. I love this kind of humor. I love mm-hmm. angry humor. And when you can make it so that the most important thing about it is that the movie had a heart. Mm-hmm. And the movie, right from the get-go, from Jason Bateman's overvoice, Guy Trilby, he says he was coming from a point of anger and pain, and he even admits, I'm not sure that this isn't the right way to go, mm-hmm. but this is what he had. And so right there off the bat, you understand where this is coming. Like, it's mm-hmm. coming from a place, our main character knows this isn't
not necessarily
exactly
rational or reasonable.
Right, but
but honest, because
he was honest, mm-hmm. and this movie made me laugh. It had heart. Yeah. Like, his character walks that very thin line where he could have gone to, like, straight, I can't follow this guy because I don't like him, mm-hmm. but you did like him. And that was very important in this movie. And then when he couples up with that kid, mm-hmm. you know, and it works. And, you know, a spelling bee movie, this was no Aquila and the Bee, folks.
Yeah.
Definitely not Aquila and the Bee. But I love sarcasm. I love that kind of humor. Jason Bateman is great mm-hmm. at delivering those lines. And the take no prisoners attitude of no, I'm going to do this, and this is a loophole, and mm-hmm. I don't really give a shit because I'm going to win.
That was the interesting part to me, though, is that I think that honestly what saved this movie for me was Bateman. Mm-hmm. Because, as you said, there was a very fine line there. And I was very inclined to not like him.
Sure.
Like, straight from the beginning, like, not a lot of sympathy for me. And, like, as much as I was laughing, I didn't want to be on his side. Mm-hmm. And what kept me going through this film was the likability that I think Bateman has just as a person. Mm-hmm. But I think I was also probably influenced because I've always seen him play such nice guys. Mm-hmm. So that made it more acceptable for me to be on his side. If this was an unknown actor that I had had no relationship with, I think that I would have been a step more removed and would not have been laughing at as much. I think that's a good choice because Bateman directed it, so he like had to be like, okay, I can do this. Yeah. Obviously.
Yeah, but he didn't want to act in it.
No.
You know, he didn't want to take that job. But everybody either was busy or just flat out turned him down.
Exactly. Because, it's not easy. Let's get in, Marissa, here. What was your thoughts?
Overall, and I admit, I didn't want to go see this movie because I knew it was going to be that really rash humor, that the very, you know, very offensive kind of humor that I'm like, it's kind of a turnoff for me. But going into it, and the first 10 seconds with his voiceover, he says the word shit. And I'm like, okay, he's setting the tone for how the movie's going to be. There's going to be a lot of cuss words. I mean, the movie's called Bad Words. But I thought his personality was really consistent throughout. Mm-hmm. And even though his character, the physicality of him doesn't change, like he's not doing any extreme fighting or anything, I thought the dialogue was really strong throughout the whole movie that kept the story going. Mm-hmm.
Well, I would agree, absolutely. I also want to echo a few things that you've already said. I thought I did cringe. There are times I said, oh, my God, I can't believe you're saying that to a kid, you know, because it did. I don't have kids, so it's not like I have that thing going on. It's just like I just can't imagine. But I also think it was a brilliant choice to choose Jason Bateman because
he's
extremely likable. And except for the change-up, because in the change-up with Ryan Reynolds, he does say some horrible, mean things because he's, quote, somebody else in that particular movie. So, but that was the only taste of it. But anyway, I gave him so much leeway because it's Jason Bateman. And I also love this humor. Having done the stand-up circuit and stuff like that, I like it when you said, you know, this is what we're doing today. We're going this far and maybe a little bit farther, and we're not going to back off at all.
Yeah.
And they did. It's bad words for a reason. And then when they go there, and just when it gets uncomfortable, and you go, please, please, stop, stop, stop. And they go a little bit more. And then they go, stop. Okay, thank you. Then you can breathe again. But I'm laughing the whole time.
And I'll say again, I just point back to the script. And I think, yes. I mean, you know, Jason Bateman took the role out of necessity. Mm-hmm. And yes, he's fantastic. You know, to your point, I think the script was so strong that if you had a talented actor, uh-huh, who could do that, that he could come across with that likability.
Yeah. Because
that overvoice sets – the character is self – he knows what he's doing is not appropriate. But he's coming from a place of such pain and hurt.
And I think that was brilliant about that.
Yes.
Is the way they withheld that. You knew something was underneath, and you knew he had a reason. You didn't know what it was. But they were really stingy about giving that. Gave it to you way late in the script.
Yep.
And for me, I kept thinking – Why is he doing this? And I thought that was very clever because, you know, a lot of times they'll give you too much up front, and this time they held it, which is very smart.
Yeah, and if the other thing, too, I'm going to add to this. For me, one of my favorite sports movie, if not favorite sports movie, is 1974 is The Bad News Bears.
Sure.
Okay. When that movie came out, okay, it was PG rated. Mm-hmm. Oh my God, the controversy because it had kids smoking, swearing, and doing whatever. But what was brilliant about The Bad News Bears is the fact that it was a satire in which the kids acted more like adults and the adults in that movie were acting like kids. This movie had a very tiny hint of that because you had the adults who were like, what about my kid? And you had that one woman who like stands up. It had that hint of that satire, which I really love, where the kids were actually more adultish, especially the little boy.
Hey, even Jason Bateman is basically throwing a tantrum. It's just lasting a long time.
And he admits that he's throwing it. He admits that I'm being childish and I'm throwing a tantrum. Mm-hmm. This is not the right way to do this, but this is where I am. And to me, that made me empathize with him. Mm-hmm. I will say there was only one time where I was like going, oh, my God, I can't believe. Mm-hmm. It was the ketchup packet on the girl's chair.
Yeah.
I was like, I knew exactly where that was going. And I'm like going, oh, my God, I can't believe that that's where he's going to go with that. And it just kept on going. I'm like, oh, this movie's great. I was like,
he's like, that's great. I'm like, those were the instances where I was like, so over the edge with when he messed with the contestants.
Yeah, that was cringeworthy.
That to me was just like, so over the line. I understood him fighting against the parents, and I understood the even the sabotage of the – or wanting to sabotage the spelling bee. All that felt like a fight because he was playing – you know, he had to be strong and, like, and be aggressive at counterattacks. But the kids, I never felt, were attacking him.
Well, there was that one kid. He sits down to him and he goes, "What are you doing here, weirdo?" And he goes, "Oh, your chair?"
Yeah, but what did the girl do? The girl did nothing.
She did nothing. She was just in this
way. Eliminating some competition.
No, I know. The boy he originally sits next to, who gets the underwear too. Yeah. All of that was very...
Yeah.
Uncalled for and unprovoked. And I think it was because, honestly, simultaneously we're getting his friendship growing with one of the kids. So I'm like, they all could be so nice.
Yeah.
So why are you destroying their hopes and dreams?
You know, you're right. It's totally uncalled for, but it is, the movie is bad words. It is what it is. And then, but what I liked about it is, again, this is the game we're playing. We're going to go this far. And it's, you know, we've seen it a lot lately. And, you know, let's face it, Breaking Bad, it was a character, the main character. You had, do you like him? Do you not like him? Do you root for him? Do you not root for him? This is the same kind of character in a much different way, but... Do you root for this guy? He's the lead. Do you want him to find some sort of resolution at the end with his father? Do you want that? Or do you just go, no, because he's just such a bad guy? And look what he did to those poor kids. He did nothing to him.
Yeah, I think...
it's challenging.
And Jason Bateman himself, I saw him in an interview, and it was a very interesting comparison. He brought up Archie Bunker from All in the Family. He's like, look at that character. He goes, this is a character... who in the time for All in the Family was always saying un-PC things, and you would, but yet at the same time, Carol O'Connor was able to bring a humanity to Archie Bunker that you didn't hate him. You would look back and laugh at his buffoonishness because you knew that, you know, he's being a buffoon, but you in the end. You would sympathize with him, or when Sammy Davis plants a kiss on him, his reaction. So, and Jason Bateman was sort of kind of likening his character in a sense. He goes, very un-PC. He goes, but you had to find like a humanity about the guy, or else the movie wouldn't work. And I agree 100%.
And I think it's interesting that the humanity of that one is in his, you know, wanting for the family unit and for his father, but two, I think it's even more greatly founded in the little boy.
Sure, absolutely.
I think that again, relationship makes his character survive because you want this. It's all about that little boy, and I think that he did such a good job of just constantly being endearing and sweet throughout the entire film. That I think that. This is a lot also on his shoulders.
And I do too. I think it lives, it raises itself because of that relationship. Yeah. Because I liken the main character, Gus.
Thank you
for correcting me. But with Llewyn Davis' character in, help me out.
Inside Llewyn Davis.
Davis' character, but actual Llewyn Davis. Because he's, again, an unlikable character. Mm-hmm. Does some horrible things, says some horrible things. And for me, that I wasn't able to hang with him like I was able to hang with Jason Bateman. Now, maybe it's just it's a comedy and stuff like that, and you get some leeway. Mm-hmm. But I think it's because of those relationships, especially with the little kid.
You know, I didn't think of it. I didn't think of it until you just brought it up. Mm-hmm. But I think you make a fantastic example of, like, inside Llewyn Davis he's just not a likable character, and there's nothing... There is really not much humanity or anything redemptive about him. He always makes the wrong decisions here, and he doesn't do it like he just does it because he gets in his own way. He's not likable, and you're right. But Jason Bateman's character, again, and I think that it's very important that the character is self-aware. The way that it's written, he knows this isn't the right course of action, but he is tantruming like a kid. Bringing in the boy, this Rohan Chand is the actor's name. Like, that kid was fantastic. And you know that he was going to lend some there was going to be a connection. But how does that connection work? And again, this is the strength of the movie. It could have been really sappy.
Oh, yeah.
It could have been really over the top. But no, it never really... it solidifies, and it comes to a very satisfactory conclusion. Mm-hmm. But throughout, like, there was nothing overly sappy about it. And, you know, the kid was great. I guess this Rohan was the only one that had to audition. Yeah. Everybody else did their parts as a favor to Jason. Of course, yeah. They wanted to. He was the only one, and he said he Jason Bateman said they brought in like 30 kids, the kids from out of New York, and he looked at them, and then he ended up Skyping with them, and he just called. He goes, "The kid's like a ray of sunshine." He was great, and he understood the comedic elements. And I talked to the parents, you know, because this is a tough movie. Yeah. You know, the parents have to be on board. I sort of liken it. Although, again, when you talk about another extreme, Chloe Moritz in Kick-Ass. Like, the first Kick-Ass movie, I mean, that little girl drops the C-bomb. And you, holy cow. And, you know, Jason Bateman, like, the director, Matthew Vaughn, had to talk to the parents and say, this is what we're doing, and make sure the kid gets it. And he did it with his Rohan Chand, and he was... Mm-hmm. His expressions were great. And even when he gets to swearing, it's great.
That's just going to the part I wanted to jump on and, like, add to what you said. Because this isn't an atypical relationship thing that we have said it before in, like, it's even mentioned in the film, in The Grinch and the Cindy Lou Who, in your classics of, like, Scrooge and Tiny Tim. Like, that's where this relationship is, like, derives from. Mm-hmm. But what they changed in Bad Words is that they have the innocent be slightly corrupted, or at least get to the point where they're ready to, like, play this ping pong battle. And he doesn't become a bad person or evil or any type of that, but he does get that kind of grown-up flair where he can at least rise to that.
Right.
He can challenge him.
And even that is very interesting because he doesn't do it to win.
Right.
Whereas normally, in a traditional script, you'd say, Jason Bateman's character would go, I'm going to feel for the kid, and I'm going to give it up for the kids. So
right.
And they don't do that.
No.
Or the kid would say, okay, fine, you found me out, now I'm going to beat you, and I'm going to win. And he doesn't do it to win the tournament. He does it to win his friendship.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And
that was – they had twist upon twist. Wherever it could go conventional, it would go left.
And that is what I loved about the script.
Yeah,
and
terrific.
You're right. And, like, you brought up the point. It's like when – say he corrupts him, he goes – you know, he's like, go ahead, say fuck. And the kid goes, fuck. He goes, are you still alive?
Yeah.
Are you still like, see, kid, it's not that bad. It's not like you're not going to hell or anything like that. And when he takes him, one of my favorite parts of this movie is when they're in the diner together and the kid brings out the cop car.
Right.
And, like, again, and this is where the movie works because it has heart. Mm-hmm. You can't really hate Jason Bateman. You know, and again, it's the old television reference where he brings out the car and he takes a little ketchup and he goes, there's a little Kojak thing. And they had that really nice moment. And for me, look, if the movie didn't have any of that and the kid, say, was, like you said, if he was too sappy, this movie would fall apart so quickly. Mm-hmm. And it really kept it, I don't know, it kept it fresh. For a spelling bee movie, and the spelling bee is the background of the story. Mm-hmm. It's not even. It's almost like the MacGuffin. It's just the device for him to be going to this, and it was good stuff. I like that, and that kid was great.
Yeah, it was a very fun relationship. I mean, between, I think that he has, you know, three people that he more or less is trying or does connect to throughout this film.
In varying degrees.
Don't look at me. So bizarre. Don't look at me.
So bizarre. Shall we talk about that? No, go ahead.
I mean, what do I have to say about him and her?
Well, again.
Definitely, I feel like in this film, like,
Catherine
very
Hahn.
Easy yeah. to make her the pillar to lean on and be supported by. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the one who really understands him. And to just kind of strip her of that and be like, nope, you're still stuck in this situation. Without her actually ever really playing up the trump card that she's the reason he's there. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think
brought
she
it up in the beginning and that's about it.
Once in the beginning and, like, once towards the very end. I thought it was a very interesting dynamic. Mm-hmm. It was different.
Diplomatic of you. That was just outright weird.
Yeah, well,
The thing is, instead of a woman being a device for understanding or moral support, it was, for to me, plot device and comedy. Mm-hmm. more than anything. And I thought that that was an interesting twist because it's so yes. much often that's where the and man's emotional stability comes from.
And you could or see him arcing because happened. Of her.
And that it wasn't that and it was focused on the little yeah. boy. Again, I thought that was very good.
A conventional way and they avoided it.
So. But it wasn't for lack of trying. Oh, yeah. It wasn't as true. It wasn't as if this Jenny Wigden, you know, Wigden didn't try to say, open up and I'm trying to. And he's like, you know, see, now you're acting like a reporter. I'm done. You know, it's not for lack of trying.
No, but, right, that's the thing that kind of bothered me because we see her throughout the whole movie trying to dig into a guy and trying to get his backstory and build his character. And I get she was there for that, for him to really open up about himself. Mm-hmm. But the fact that there was that one moment where she turned on the recorder.
Right.
But we never got the resolution to what she used with that information. Like, it wasn't reported anywhere. It was just a moment for him to open up. So I felt like her reporting instincts and aspects that were used throughout the movie weren't used to the full extent.
You didn't get to see the payoff of her role.
There wasn't the resolution to her reporting skills to that.
Not to her reporting skills.
Because throughout the whole movie, she's saying she's trying to get at least one quote for him. Mm-hmm. And then we see this moment where she gets this whole story on him, but we don't see it, like, people don't realize it, just the audience do.
Right. Yeah,
there's definitely not there's not a payoff for her, besides the fact that there's a handhold.
And they end up, you can sort of make the leap that they end up together. That he...
You could, but I don't need it. I mean, for me, the payoff was that she found out and then she relayed that information. So
sure.
Other than that, they weren't using her for his arc.
No.
In the beginning or throughout. So I didn't need her to be the arc at the end.
Other than that...
It was the kid that you needed that relationship resolved. Yes. You didn't need hers resolved. Because the other thing is, we have no idea what this character was like absent of him being aware of who his father is. Who knows if he was a nice guy or a bad guy or the same guy? Maybe because he says, you know, I don't know. I don't know if this is a good idea. But this is where I am now.
This is where I am
now. So this could just be his six months, 6 weeks. I don't know how long he's been on this thing, but I found that fascinating because had he not learned this, I don't know that he'd ever met this person. Reporter,
right.
We have no idea how he'd respond to her, but she was clearly in the way of his goal.
Mm-hmm.
His goal was, I've got to get here, do this thing, and you're just kind of you're only helping me along. But other than that, stop interrupting.
And that's she also what I was having problems because we see her; she gets that information from the FBI agent, but she's not the one that revealed it. It was Guy who told it to the audience. I'm like, okay, so what was her whole point in getting that?
But to force him to say it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but she also, too, was the... Because she was also, like, he used her as the legal aspect of whatever he was doing.
The only thing she knew was that who his father was. She didn't know the story behind it.
Yeah. No,
so that's what
didn't.
We got to learn was the story behind it.
Yeah, and for him, I think for... As a reporter, to see that an adult found a loophole and that he's going to try to... Like, she didn't know what his motivations were for doing this. Mm-hmm. But again, I'll go back to the beginning. Again, I think something else that was very smartly done. And it was, usually overvoice can be so cliche and whatever. But in this case, you found out through pieces of dialogue or through pieces of overvoice, well, how is he such a good speller? Well, A, he's a proofreader. Mm-hmm. So he knows words. B, he does have, it was mentioned that he has some semblance of a photographic memory. Mm-hmm. So he
has a genius IQ.
Yeah. And so that makes sense why he's such an amazing speller and how he can do this. So then you come up with the loophole. Mm-hmm. And at the beginning, she's like, and now she's on the phone with my lawyer and he's going to come down here and, you're calling me a terrorist. Oh, well, defamation is throwing that stuff on there
defamation
too.
Defamation of character.
Yeah. And so he knew how to work the system, and she was helping him work the system. But from her perspective, it was probably, wow, this adult found this loophole, and he's going to show all these people off. But she didn't know. She knew there was a story, but he wasn't biting.
So I think instead of the reporter aspect, they should have gone with the lawyer aspect. She could have been a lawyer that was tagging along just to help him. Because for her research part, I don't think that was.
I
don't think
she's digging.
Lawyer find out? What
I
she
think
found
that
out.
Lawyer does.
On top of it,
too,
there's it's a multi like functional role.
Mm-hmm.
I think on top of that, one of the things that's first introduced is that each contestant must have press or be associated with press, and so she fulfilled that as well.
Yeah.
So you know, they were just they. In total, it was a very minimal like cast of like. Oh, yeah. So the fact that she could accomplish all those roles, maybe it was a little forced. I think that one thing this movie had to have was every part of his like horrible upbringing lent him to be able to do this. Because like if he hadn't been with the mom who was going around, like he would have passed eighth grade and then he that
ran
whole,
away from the rent.
Exactly. Right. So it's like they had to clarify each thing on a rule basis just to make it justifiable that he could be in the spelling bee. And I think that there are so many that they had to kind of spread them out where they could. And to me, it worked. I mean, I think that if I really thought about it, how crazy it would be for someone to be in those circumstances that this could happen.
Yeah.
It takes you a little bit out of it.
Sure, but you know, the other thing, it is crazy, but I also go, this is a woman who says, don't look at me, don't look at me. She's already not quite all there.
Right, right.
Okay?
Right.
Yeah, so she sees
she's
a story.
She's a little damaged, right.
She gets hint of a story, however, that some 40-year-old is breaking into or wants to break into spelling bees, and she thinks, I've got a hot story on my hand.
And we have to face it,
that's
too.
That's how nuts she is.
Yeah, but there is some semblance of an attraction there as well.
Oh, yeah.
Because there's that other guy whom she gets the FBI guy that lays the hit out on her, and she's just like, no, see, I'm going to my room. So there is an attraction to the Jason Bateman character that she has.
Yeah. Which also says a lot about her. It's like, why do you keep doing this? Well, get away from this man. He's not good for you.
She says that too. She's like,
so she's aware enough, she's not strong enough to do anything about it.
Right. Which is fine. They're all damaged characters.
Exactly. They're all damaged, which I thought was great.
Except for the little kid who now swears because the middle finger.
Who's going to be damaged like the rest of us.
Yeah. And who has maybe some problems with
daddy issues.
Daddy.
Daddy, she's in huggers, but I mean, whatever.
Oh my god,
say.
That scene, that kid's face.
Which one?
With the hooker.
Oh, yes. Oh, okay.
Well, not all. Not,
what was her name?
No, not all girls have nipples.
She had a great
something
name.
With like an M.
Yeah, it's a great name.
Not all girls have nipples.
Yeah.
I forget. We could probably find
great.
Out.
Oh, and then you can see already how corrupt he already is how much more to touch him.
Yeah.
Yeah,
how much? Like, oh no, the poor kid.
he was like, fuck ice cream.
Exactly. terrible, the poor kid.
Yeah, no, I thought it was, no, that's not her.
I'm looking. We are trying to find the name of the one.
Marzipan.
Marzipan.
She's a cheese.
Yeah.
Wow, she's the candy.
There you
Kim
go.
Kim Lee Smith.
Oh, my God. That was so bizarre. Again.
That scene was great.
Everywhere you'd go conventional, I was like, oh, okay, that's enough. Good. All right, move on. Like,
well, the whole conversation came about with, not all women have nipples. What? It goes, well, sometimes you see them, but sometimes you don't. Oh, come with me. But the look on the kid's face was like, I mean, that kid was awesome. The kid was really, really good.
Bizarre.
Could you imagine just being like, I mean, and again, I give the parents credit. I give Jason Bateman credit because he's the one that has to go sell this to not only the child actor, but he really has to sell it to the parents. He has to say, okay, look, this is what I'm going for. Mm-hmm. This is what your son's bringing. Yes, he's going to be surrounded by me talking filthy and he's even going to swear, but there was a motivation. There was a reason behind it. It wasn't just for the shock value of a kid saying bad words. There was reason behind it. And when the relationship bonds, you know, when they get to that final spelling bee, you know, even then you never really think that maybe the relationship isn't fully bonded. Because Jason Bateman's walking out of the room. He's like, bye, and he just gives him the finger, and he walks out, and you're going, well, of course that's how that's going to end.
Bond.
But when he sees him, when he picks him up at school, and, you know, he's in that the cop car.
They're playing cops and robbers.
Yeah.
I mean, how much better can it be?
But that was great.
It's great.
Like, you know, and then you just feel
slightly dangerous.
But, you know.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I thought they were going to run over
those kids. I mean, he's not a good role model, but it's fitting.
but you know what? I think that the movie was smart enough in which that character, he had his arc.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, and the final spelling bee is proof of that, and him, yeah, I'm going to reach out to this kid and find this kid.
He wrote the note. I mean, he had really good moments. He had wrote the note to his father. He was actually kind to her at the end, and then he had the moment with the kid. They resolved a lot of things.
Yeah, I think, and it did it without going over the line. Mm-hmm. It was, I can't call this a sappy movie by any stretch.
No, and I really accepted the friendship that he built with the little kid, because during the movie when they were finally bonding, that he says, yeah, you're smart, but kids don't care about that. You're going to get picked on. And then we see at the end of the movie when the kids are picking on the little kid, he's the friend that's going to be there who's not going to be, because he knows what that's like.
Yeah.
And I liked how they built that friendship in that way.
Yeah.
That was a very good build.
And again, just going back, Jason Bateman, this is another part we haven't. There was a vulnerability to his character. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he even goes, I always try to build a vulnerability into any role I play. If you don't do that, then the audience won't go on with the journey, which is true in this case. And if you can find the relatable thread, the humanity of the character, then you'll have the audience's attention. And in this case, I think you just have to play it so carefully.
He did, you know, because he was. This is not the right term, but he was falling for the kid. Meaning he was, you could see him not even being aware of it. He was unwittingly building a relationship with this kid in a weird way, but in a way that was paternal and you know, looking out for him, all that other stuff. And then when he overhears that, he overhears the son and the father talking, he goes ballistic.
Felt betrayed.
Exactly, of course. And again, another tantrum moment with him going, okay, that's it. Stomping and burning Todd and the whole thing.
Oh my God, that again.
Poor Todd. Yeah.
Poor Todd. But you got to see a wonderful little thing, because he does arc towards the end like crazy, because you see that paternal sense of protection coming back, because he doesn't want the kid to have a horrible childhood like he did.
And again, the parents, you know, it's sort of hinted too, the pressure that a parent can bestow on a kid, you know, for the spelling.
Whether by their absence or by their presence.
Mm-hmm. True. So yeah, absolutely. I like that. the line where he says, yeah, my father sits in first class, but he says I should sit and coach like everybody else.
Because
it builds character. And like, even that Jason Bateman's character is like, dude, that's messed up. Like, that's crazy. And he stays at a much nicer hotel, and he lets me be myself.
See, I thought that was very interesting just for the little kid. And then once it was revealed that this was a whole, I guess, scam, it had me questioning that whole plan, like, was the father very rich and actually wanting this, or was this a plan from before we even met him?
I'm going to say it was a plan.
Like, even in the plan, right? Because that, to me, I was just like, oh,
that's how it fooled Machiavellian the dad is. Yeah.
Such planning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but planning, like, knowing where someone's going to sit on a plane, that's very Machiavellian.
I know, I just said, yeah, okay, I'll believe that.
I think the plan, I mean, for me, I didn't think it went as deep-rooted. I think it was when they're at the hotel, and he's like, oh, and the father sees this guy, and he's like, oh, maybe it was a story that he read that woman reported in the newspaper about him, because he was gaining notoriety. Mm-hmm. He had a bit of notoriety for what he was doing.
Yeah.
And so the father was like, oh, okay, this is going to be competition. In fact, the father he wasn't doing anything that Jason Bateman's character of Guy was doing to the kids.
Yeah.
The father was taking out the competition, just like Guy was systematically taking them out. Yeah. I like
I'm telling
the way
you,
Guy
the spelling
did it better.
Bees are cutthroat.
Oh yeah,
but then also Guy using that disconnect between the kid and his father, and then there was that one moment where he fake called being the kid's father, say, like, I'm going to take you for ice cream. And we find out that, like, the kid doesn't even bond with his own father. But using that against him was cold.
Yeah, and it was great because...
But brilliantly done.
Yeah. Exactly, because you saw how much the kid wanted to have that moment with his father.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That was just sad.
Yeah.
But the kid's so smart. The kid's so smart, he goes... Damn, I've been duped.
When he's standing outside. It's like, no.
Oh, it's terrible.
It was. John. Again, it was just... All I get, you know, when I saw the movie, thank God there were these two other women who were sitting about four seats to my right. Uh-huh. And when did I see this movie? Tuesday night, I think it was. And it was relatively, I'm going to say it was about 80% full, mm-hmm. which sort of surprised me on a Tuesday night. And if it, but these two women, man, they were hooting it up Alan? As loud as I, and I was like, thank God, because I would be probably the loudest of the bunch. Thank you for being here. It was great.
I think I see movies at unconventional times because every time Dimitri, we were just talking about another movie before this, and I see movies at like 11 o'clock showing and 9 a.m. showing. These are the showings in which it's me, myself, and I pretty much in the theater. Sometimes there's like the one other random group or like there's two couples and then it's like me. And I'm like by myself, just watching my movie.
Well, I was surprised.
I saw this movie in the morning and there was probably three other people. So, and that started my day off with this kind of movie.
I saw it completely alone.
Sets a good tone.
Yeah.
Speaking of that, I don't think it's a remark on how the movie's doing because I think that it's been doing very well. It's just unconventional.
Right. Let's talk about how it's doing.
So do we have I do. I do have that. Well, let's say, number one, it opened up on March 14th. So it opened up, not over a month, almost a month.
And it went through kind of like a change. Originally, this was a, where did it premiere? Does anyone know? I think it was Toronto Film Festival. And then the rights were bought over and then it went.
Well, it had a big premiere at South by
Southwest.
Yeah,
September 6th at TIFF.
Mm-hmm. At TIFF. And it had a big premiere. It had its like major premiere at South by Southwest. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it opened up at six locations and it did 114,000 with a location average of 18,000 per screen. Not too bad. Not great, but not too bad. And then it has eventually opened up to 142 locations and it's done $4.1 million thus far. So, you know, the only thing that I couldn't find on this is what its budget was. And, I mean, it doesn't look like it was overly expensive. It was a focus feature.
I can't imagine it being overly expensive.
And they were
pretty contained.
They were filming everything at, what was it, the Sun Something Lodge?
It was the Sportsman's Lodge down here on Ventura.
Right. And the Pasadena Convention Center. Yeah.
That's right.
You know, so, I had a lot of that. So,
I noticed Colfax as one of the streets that they showed. I was like, oh, that's not too. We know that area.
It couldn't have taken that long.
Not that it's against quality, but like, to me, I think I've just seen so much advertising for it here in LA. Mm-hmm. Like, there's so many of the billboard out there for bad words. And I see it all the time. So I'm like, but compared to the budget of the film and like what they went through, I'm like, wow. I feel like their media output's probably about the same as their filming budget.
No, that's interesting because I haven't noticed any, but I haven't really been paying attention. I just haven't.
They've been around.
It's been around, and they did a big Focus distributor, which is falls under the Universal umbrella.
Okay.
And, they started off my first recollection of the movie was a Red Band trailer. Bad words, Jason Bateman, and I looked at this Red Band trailer, and I was hooked. Like, I saw that Red Band, and I'm like going, I am going to love this movie. And they kept on releasing things like that, and which was pretty cool. I think they did, they did as good a job as you can do marketing this movie. They knew, but I think it was also they had the faith in Jason Bateman and what he did. Now, one thing, too, is like Rotten Tomatoes currently, it's at a 64%, which is still considered fresh. But, you could tell that some of the harshness perhaps might have turned some people off.
It may have. It's hard to say because as a movie, I think it's a well-constructed, well-executed movie. Mm-hmm. I think it's very good.
Yeah.
But the only thing I can think of that turned it on is if it's not your cup of tea. It's not your cup of tea.
Yeah, it's not your cup of tea. Yeah, and maybe we can even look at some of the headlines of the reviews, if we can find some. But... I was
because in terms of let's break it down in terms of their departments because we know we've talked a little bit about story but let's get more into script. Go ahead.
I can give you about the budgets because I'm trying to look it up here is according to Variety that this film was under $10 million. It's not giving exact amount. It says
I could easily believe that.
I know that the deal was made for $7 million but that was for I believe it being the rights being. Bought, but I think that they're mostly quoting it as under $10 million budget. Bad words cost under $10
million.
Under 10. According to Variety.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that seems about it.
Yeah.
Wouldn't
there you go.
Yeah, especially I mean, it definitely, you know.
And how much does a billboard cost in LA? Anybody yeah, know? I don't know that's
it. Well,
Dallas Buyers Club is what, $5 million? $5 to $7 million, I can't remember what it was. But it kind of had that same feel in terms of its look and stuff like that.
Yeah, and I didn't know what the
production value. Go ahead.
Yeah, I don't know how much focus put into the prints and advertising. Yeah. Let's face it. This thing is only at 847 locations. Yeah. It opened up at 6.
Yeah.
So this isn't, you know, the movie probably won't get over 1,000. I think 847 is its cap. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, there are other movies that are coming out. Right. And
It's kind of a shame if you ask me, because there are other movies that are getting much better release, which aren't anywhere near as good.
Yeah. I agree.
It happens.
I know. It happens all the time. But
no, I mean, and so it's, I don't know. I mean, Focus had enough faith in Jason Bateman, and obviously he's already directing another movie with Nicole Kidman that he starts filming in May.
Wow. Which I'm sure he's very sorry, because I know that I was reading that he's been in the acting game for quite a while. Geez, he was... his father's an actor and director, but he said, was quoted to have said, he's been acting for the past 20 years to get to the point to be a director. Mm-hmm. And that's really why he was wanting to be in this business. Mm-hmm. And acting, I'm assuming that's why he wasn't as gung-ho about portraying role, because he wants to direct. So, and I think that he made a good, very nice debut.
Yeah.
And we'll look forward to seeing more.
I don't think you could say that in any way that this was not a good directing directorial debut.
You're probably going to hate me for bringing this up, but I'm going to go, you know, I was thinking about this after that, you know, yes, I think he did a very good job directing this movie. It made me think of Veronica Mars, where we talked about its load. Yeah, so Bad Words didn't look like a TV show. Bad Words looked like a movie to me. You could tell it was an independent film, and you can tell, but it didn't look television-ish at all.
That's what I meant by the decent comparison to Dallas Buyers Club.
Right.
That looked like a movie. This looked like a movie to me.
Yeah, and you know, he comes from the TV. He's directed television episodes before. Mm-hmm. And if this is his goal to keep on, listen, this guy doesn't stop working. He was on Howard Stern, and he was talking about, he goes, you know, I spent a good chunk of my life, like, just partying around.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, I'm at a point in my life now. He goes, yeah, I want to work. I don't want to blow my opportunity. I don't know how long it's going to be around for. Yeah. And so I'll direct. I'm in Horrible Bosses 2, which I saw him in another interview. He was talking about Horrible Bosses 2, and he's very proud of that. I mean, he was an identity thief. He was he's acting. Now he's directing. He starts another movie in May with Nicole Kidman. And he's like, so he's got his family and he's living his dreams.
He's capitalizing on it.
Yeah, so good for him. Good for him. As long as he makes people laugh.
And don't you think that because of this effort, he should get more opportunity? Absolutely.
Definitely. Yeah. I think that if you're taking – I think that I was pretty much just on the outline of this movie, of it being, you know, that – dirty, harsh, aggressive comedy. Mm-hmm. I think I was not the target audience. Mm-hmm. And the fact that I like it so much means that he did a very good job, I think. Because when you can bring in those kind of like the outliers that you don't think are going to like your film, and they do, that shows that you can tackle different genres, that you can approach different stories, and you're going to shed some new light and some...
So I think he took some risks by, first of all, doing this, because this is not an easy one to do. Then he showed great skill in being able to handle the tone well. Mm-hmm. Because, like you said, if you go overboard, too sappy in this area, too harsh in that area, you're going to have a very uneven film, and you're going to limit your audience even more.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he walked a very fine line and did it well.
Yeah. And, you know, when he first was reading the script, he was he's
by Andrew Dodge, by the way.
Yeah. And he was like, oh, another spelling bee movie? Oh, and then he's like, and then they bring in a kid. He goes, oh, let me guess. He's like, and this is what Focus gave for him project. He goes, and he's like going, let me guess. He goes, oh, he befriends the kid, and they blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And then he goes, but I kept on reading, and I'm like, whoa, this is really solid. It didn't, to your point, there was conventionalism, and then somewhere down the line,
we
took a left-hand
just
turn.
Just when you thought I was going to go here, we go there.
Yep, we zigged, and we zagged.
And we wanted to zag.
And, you know, to his credit, he did do a fine balancing act. Personally, I was laughing hysterically throughout it. And again, it's the kind of thing that can't happen. You know, that's not, you can't say those things in real life. And that's what I love about the movies. You and even sometimes, well, you can.
You just might get a chair chucked at your windshield.
How often are you able to have that stuff come trippingly off your tongue pristinely?
Exactly. And you, yeah, it's like, that's why I love that kind of humor, because it only happens in that world. Right. And it's hysterical. It's sometimes it's like when he goes off on that mother.
Yeah.
Like, that was just genius to me. But she deserved, in my opinion, she deserved every single thing she had coming to her. And it was like, hey.
Well, I can't go that far, but I enjoyed watching it.
Yeah. And then when she started doing that stuff at the spelling bee, mm-hmm. it was like, you know, she showed her dark colors.
I enjoyed watching it because I was very comfortable in my cushion leather seat, and it was on a screen. This is the only way I could experience this.
But again, she attacked him. Like, she came up to him and said, why don't you just, like, get out of this? You don't belong in this with blah, 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 blah.
Yeah,
and then she swore in front of the kid, and he's, like, going, really? Like, you're that much better than me. You just swore in front of a kid.
But she launched a little spitwad, and he had a barrage of a howitzer, a couple of tanks.
That's right.
And the thing is, though, it's if you see these things in person, not captured in cinema, if I was sitting at the table next door, I would probably be cowering under the table, and then I might throw some like hot chocolate at his face and run away.
But we don't see this.
Well, that's why it's kind of a vicarious thrill, because there have been times when somebody has accosted you and you've wanted to be able to decorum or civility,
go back up that sock,
whatever. Exactly.
And
who hasn't wanted to strip away all artifice and just go right at somebody?
Right.
Nothing? No ladies? Never?
Really?
Oh, come on. You haven't wanted to call somebody to task.
I have never had a monologue.
All the time, but I don't.
Oh, no, of course not. That's what we're saying.
Yeah. All the time, but we
don't. We don't.
No.
I don't think my mind has ever gone as far as his monologue towards that woman.
Poor thing.
I don't believe you.
The thing that I found interesting is, yes, we see Guy say all these harsh, offensive things to all these different people throughout. Right. But then the one person he really wants to tell it to is his father, and he doesn't really. Mm-hmm. I mean, he tries to write it down in the note, but the way the father reads it, but it's not in the harsh backlash at him. It's in more an adult, conservative way, I guess, of saying what he really wanted to say, but not in that mean version that we see him
do throughout the whole movie. In that letter.
Well, not only that, but that shows his arc.
Yeah,
because he spewed all his venom, which you're right, he should have directed it squarely at the dad, but by that time he had kind of gone out of the tantrum, and you could see the maturity come back, and he was just honest without having to be
harsh. Yeah.
Yes.
The glimmer of this comes on a lot earlier in the film when he's talking. And they're talking about the spelling bee. And they're talking about what it is. He goes, the point is to win. And he goes, the word closure is used.
Yeah, he used the word,
And obviously someone won in the actual spelling bee. Mm-hmm. So here was the closure. And that wrapped it up to me. And that was the arc. And it just encapsulated kind of what the movie was about. And I kind of knew he wasn't going to fight. He wasn't going to seek revenge. Because overall, that one word earlier on showed what he was really searching for.
Foreshadowing for you.
Yes. And so, like, I felt very relieved when he achieved that closure. Because it was really, you know, they say as an actor, you have that line of truth where this is very much the core or your character's inner truth. And for me, it was always that word. Mm-hmm. So the fact that he got to that point and circled to it and found it, I was very satisfied with.
Yeah, and it happens at a great time, too, because his goal throughout this was to humiliate his father and his father's ideals and what he did because...
And his legacy.
And his legacy. Well, yeah, and because his father put himself up. I mean, that guy put himself up on such a pedestal. He wanted to bring him so far down and ruin everything that he had. That was his goal. His goal wasn't to come out and, like...
Oh, he didn't care. He didn't care about what happened to him or anybody else.
No,
scorched earth policy. I'm getting him. I don't care about anything else.
And it wasn't going to be like through a conversation. He goes, I was going to humiliate him in front of on live TV. Yep. I was going to take this show down and show him how he made me feel. And when he has that, he goes through his arc. Mm-hmm. And it comes down, of course it comes down to him and the little kid. Yeah. And, you know, and then when it's like, oh, come on.
Yeah, even that, again, totally unconventional. You expect, okay, the kid will win. And the kid spins it around on him. I mean, again, it's every way you could spin it differently, they did.
Yeah.
So, and let's talk, let's give our kudos to our writer. His name is Andrew Dodge, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
I don't have any idea what a CV
Andrew
is.
Andrew Dodge, this is like his first screenplay.
Well, he's, congratulations to him.
He's doing something. His second one is going to be Oh Lucky Day, which is in pre-production right now. Mm-hmm. But Bad Words is looks to be his first screenplay.
Well, congratulations again.
Yeah, it's just smart.
Masterful job.
Yeah, he does.
Way to twist things around.
And in play outside of convention.
Yes.
You know, it's funny. We did talk about reviews and what could potentially, why people didn't like it.
Mm-hmm.
So from the Robert Evergreen of the Globe and Mail, the laughs in this film are all mean-spirited or just frat boy jokes. I'm like, no. Or frat boy gross. And I'm like, did you see the same movie? Because if you stuck, like, I hand it to you because you stuck through, and, you know, and Marissa as well, because you didn't want to see it at all. I didn't, like, it was above and beyond just Bad Words and
frat. Well, yeah, I think that's too simplistic, and I think they just missed it.
Yeah.
I think to say it was all frat by humor, I think it was, you totally missed it.
Hangover 3 is frat boy humor that doesn't go
anywhere. The Upcoming Neighbors.
Or,
exactly, is frat boy humor.
I saw the movie, and I'll reserve. Yeah. Well, we'll talk. Well, if we dissect it, I'll talk then. But I saw the movie last week, and it is frat boy humor. Yeah. You know, the Wesley Morris. I didn't like anything about the movie before discovering that guy. What guy is up to? I actively hated it after I figured out what was actually going on. Wow, this guy really didn't like it. So. Yeah, it's just very interesting.
Well, for those of us who did like it, I'm going to add to the point about Andrew Dodge creating this new film, as you said, called, I believe, what was it? Oh, Lucky Day.
Oh, Lucky Day.
I think we're going to be looking forward to some more very clever wit, because the cast, the credited cast as of now, is Peter Dinklage, who, in the case you guys don't know, is on Game of Thrones and is wonderful. So,
are you a fan?
I can't tell.
I just got very excited for this movie that I know nothing about.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. Those comments, those reviews were very interesting.
Yeah, and, you know, in an intermittently entertaining and very occasionally unpredictable comedy. What's wrong with an unpredictable comedy? I mean, You know, it's not as cliche as they want it to be.
I know. We keep talking about how we want something different and why all these sequels. Why, you know, here a movie is that turns convention on its head and does something out of the box and, you know, doesn't get rewarded for it.
Yeah, I agree. And let's see. But you know, the other things that I was looking at about this movie is not only Andrew Dodge, but there are some other people involved at this flick. That were associated with some other movies that we've come to know and love. Let's see. I think it was either the editor. All right. Well, the editor has done movies like Project X, Bad Words. He did Step Up 3D. Recall the Fair Game, Donnie and Clyde. So he's done some, you know, Project X, I think, was probably his biggest movie. Mm-hmm. Let's see. We also have, I think it was the editor that may have worked on The Way, Way Back.
I was interesting that you say that because as I was watching it, there were moments that, again, maybe because it was the budget or whatever, but it did remind me of that. Only, I don't know exactly, but maybe because there was a kid involved. I don't know.
A spirit of it.
Yeah, it could have been.
Yeah, Tatiana S. Regal. Mm-hmm. And when I noticed Way, Way Back, I said, well, you know, too, How does the editing come into, because Way, Way Back had a lot of heart.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we talked about that. And can you edit a movie around so that, you know, you can give a little bit of heart? Because she also did.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely.
You know, she worked on Pulp Fiction at some point. She did Fright Night, mm-hmm. Bad Words, The Men Who Stare at Goats. So, you know, once I found out that she worked on The Way, Way Back, I said, this woman's great. You know, I like that. And, you know, the pacing. Well, number one, thank God this movie was like only an hour and a half.
88 minutes or whatever.
Yeah. That was like great. It's a comedy that doesn't. Yeah.
It's a very small, independent movie. It's the scale is small. Everything about it.
Fast paced.
I've said it before. Outside of it's a mad world, no other comedy need be over an hour and 45 minutes. 2 hours, you know. Yeah. And yeah, I'm talking to you, Judd Apatow. We don't need 2 hour, 20 minute comedies. Like, just a comedy should be in, out, have fun. Let's be done. So 90 minutes, when I looked at my watch.
It can be done.
It can be done. Should be done.
That's, do you have the cinematographer there handy?
I do.
Because we were just talking about the look of it. So, and you.
Ken Tseng was the cinematographer.
Ken Tseng?
Yeah, Ken Tseng. That was the person that had done, like, Step Up 3. Okay. And, yeah, we were talking about.
I thought you were talking about the editor when you were mentioning.
No. That's Tatiana, the cinematographer. He did Disconnect, Project X, Step Up 3D, Sorority Row. Quarantine, which is based off of a Spanish, really good Spanish horror flick, but he made that movie look good.
And he will be working again with Jason Bateman in their next film, with Nicole Kidman. So they will be rejoining.
I like the colorization of this movie because it was more that kind of sepia tone, the brown and yellows. And if it wasn't for the actual dialogue saying that up into 2011 and now, and the graphics, even the lower thirds during the Spelling Bee, I was like, those are new graphics. You can tell we're kind of in the today's era time. Mm-hmm. But if it wasn't for the actual visual telling of the audience of what time it is, I wouldn't have known the decade the that they were in.
Definitely. Right. Yeah. And I think that lent itself to kind of the topic of the film being, I think that there's like a classicness, or like more of, I guess, in a way, the Spelling Bee has like an older condition of tradition, age, whatnot. And I think that taking those tones kind of embrace that more. I think that if this was very bright and new, it wouldn't have seemed as realistic. I think that you kind of needed that layering of age and legacy into this film, and I think the colorization helped. You can't like put the golden quill with like bright blue.
But you know, I thought it was hysterical when we actually did go to the public radio, not public radio, but public broadcasting, where they actually showing it, and everything got all of a sudden got hyper clear, and I thought that was just hysterical when they were opening graphics.
I thought that was great timing because from a film. From an audience point of view, we realize it's a film. But then when that all is going down, we're like, oh, this is film. But then they cut right to the TV slate saying, oh, yeah, this also is being broadcasted, too. Yeah. So you can't watch that. You shouldn't watch that. No. That was fun.
You know, we didn't talk about, somebody else who's worth mentioning, because we did talk about Catherine Hahn and Rohan, of course, but Alice and Janney.
Great term.
You know, Alice and Janney again.
Worked with him in... Wasn't she in Juno?
Yeah, she was.
Yeah.
She's the mom.
Yeah. And, she was really good at the role that she had. And,
cold. Oh, yeah. She played a colder, darker character.
I'll get you.
Oh, yeah.
And, but it goes to show that, like, she's someone who's very set in her ways. Mm-hmm. She's been there every year. She knows how...
She's been the director for 20 years.
She knows how the Spelling Bee is supposed to go. And then when you have this rude guy come in and break that system, that's going to bother her. And she played that so well.
I feel like she would have had a great friend in... oh, my goodness. Oh, no. I'm blanking out on name. Miss Congeniality. The director of the pageant.
Oh, sure.
Those two women would just get along so well.
Yeah, nobody's going to taint my...
She had a golden quill up her ass.
Up her ass. That's a bad word. Now, the other guy that was great, too, was the Steve Whiting, who played the...
Mumble Jumble?
He played the proctor. You know, and he even gets his comeuppance, because this is the guy that's just reading the words, and she just kept on, like, trying not to... He seemed to be okay and stuff, but he gets his comeuppance.
You know, it's all about everybody's got their little ounce of power. Everybody that's, you know, getting thwarted or in some way getting underhanded by some... I can't even use words at the moment.
It was people playing for positions of power.
Oh, exactly. It was all over the place. I loved how, you know, anybody who had their thumb on somebody else would get screwed.
Yeah, and the proctor at the Spelling Bee, all he's trying to do is he's just saying the words. And, you know, but it was nice to actually see that character get his comeuppance.
Yeah.
Because you talk about being hit by shrapnel.
Everybody got their comeuppance. Even the hotel desk clerk, she says, okay, here's your room. She got a nice little present out of it.
Again, it was a great payoff. Yeah. Here you go. And again, you just sit there.
Basket of Roses.
Yeah, I was laughing.
And,
much.
You know, Philip Baker Hall does a nice turn there as
yep.
well.
Yep.
Because at the end there, when he's actually reading the letter, and, you know,
doesn't leave it scattered on the ground.
And then it's taped up and everything, and it's obviously had an effect on him. He looked gutted there when he heard that, you know.
And he puts it next to his heart.
He does.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the symbolism was great.
I have a hard time. I always see him as the librarian police from Seinfeld.
Yeah, you know, all the movies he's done, and that's the thing.
I know.
Oh my god,
he's just so good at it. It yeah, is okay. such a funny episode, right. But you know, and then
but nobody misses even the announcer of the whole thing. What's his name?
What are you talking
the
about?
The announcer of the tournament, who
the
was
Proctor?
With, yeah, no, not the Proctor, but the guy who was.
Mm-hmm.
Pete Fowler.
Yes,
that character. Ben Falcon.
Thank you,
Ben Falcon. Yeah,
yeah. Everybody yeah. does a great job.
Everybody for, again, when, you know, you could.
This is what happens when I don't have my notes in front of me. I can't remember everybody's name.
But when you put everybody together, you know, obviously he's no qualms about it. He had to reach out to his friends and help him out. And, you know, they all came on board.
Any qualms, man. You're going to be in a movie. You're going to have a good role. And it's going to take you 3 days to shoot it. Of course, you better get it. Show up.
But there was a
like
camaraderie.
Like for the Muppet movie. Right. Show up.
And there was a camaraderie. And, mm-hmm. and like, you could tell that he's put together a good crew.
Yeah.
And, you know, making that leap from the small screen to do a movie. And, you know, he had smart people around him, and he had good, talented actors around him, whether, you know, they're good character actors. And they looked like they had a good time, and they looked like, as if they were as supportive of Jason Bateman as he was of his cast and crew. And I think that, again, we always talk about movie magic and how that collaborative process works. And I think it helps here. When you're working on a small budgeted movie like this, you need that to get through it. So, that was good stuff.
We talked about tech editing. We just finished our acting. What music?
I remember, like, the music kind of, like, in the beginning. I've noticed it in, like, the first two scenes. Mm. After that, I think I was just so overpowered by the language. And, like, this was, you know, it was a very auditory movie, but not for me for the music sense, but for the language sense. And I think my ears were so concentrated on the bad words that a lot of the music was going right over my head.
Yeah. I said it every time we do these, I don't really remember the music. And what I do remember was the absence of it. I didn't really, have any kind of sense that it was even scored. I mean, sure it was in some fashion, but I didn't really pay attention.
Yeah,
I think because this movie was so dialogue driven that we didn't need music to also accompany it. We had everything within the script.
Exactly. That's the other thing I was going to say about it. I noticed that you didn't need any musical cues to help you identify where the main characters were in their emotion.
Right. I think that a lot of that stems from the hidden nature of his character. Yeah. I think that music often is that it's that emotional pull. Yeah. It like leads you to be scared or happy or whatnot. Mm-hmm. And you know, he had this such a hidden center. Mm-hmm. You know, he was putting out this very aggressive nature, but you always knew he was hiding something. So I think that silence that you feel or remember comes from that, because you're left so unaware of what his true reasons are until the end, and like introducing him in the beginning with the voiceover. And I think that also stuck with me. It's like, I, you know, there's some people who you feel are whimsical or powerful, and he is just very secretive, and I think that was expressed through the silence.
And they do have some musical numbers. They have the
I think a lot of it was like Source,
right?
Like, you know, they
the
were songs from
and
a radio,
kind of
right?
Stuff, so,
Do you have I was trying to pull the soundtrack up on Apple
iTunes. Have it on iTunes. mostly it was composed by Rolf Kent.
Right, but are there any like pop type songs on it that are not orchestral or score?
I think
there were at the end of the credits, but I can't recall them.
Yeah, but I thought there was some throughout as well. You
know, I think that the moment I really noticed the music was the montage when they're going through the grocery store
right.
and playing those pranks. I think that was because there was no dialogue during that.
No.
It was just all fun action on screen.
And they used just fun little things. I mean, I know it's such a little thing, but fun use of slow-mo.
Right.
Because it was very effective. They didn't overly do it, but when they did it, it punched the laugh.
Yeah, and they used it a lot, too, when they were in the car and they were doing fishtails.
Yeah.
And just looking the expression on both their face, they were like going, yeah, this is like great. The kid was like awesome. And, you know, regardless of how everything turned out, when you find out that the kid's father was trying to play him, you know, I didn't see that coming. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you did catch that kid was actually developing a bond with Jason Bateman that he wasn't, that he couldn't develop with his
again, it usually happens with a lead in going after my goal. I find that I have a bond with this kid and they flipped it here. They had the kid falling, you know, having a relationship with it.
Right. It was nice.
It was a nice twist.
And there was that one scene where the kid comes home or the kid comes to his hotel room and he opens the door. And through the crack of the door, you see the father there.
Yeah.
And my first instinct was like, oh, shit, this kid's going to get busted. Exactly. And then the father says like, he's like, yeah, come in. And I was like, okay, that's weird because I thought he was really going to go ballistic. But I didn't connect the dots to where.
Well, not until you find out later that it's all loose.
Yeah, definitely that. I think that while I was watching it, I was very confused because the shot sequence for that was you got him waking up after a shot of a bunch of empty bottles.
Yeah.
And there's no inclination that the bottles are ever moved or cleaned up before we return to the room. Mm-hmm. So automatically my mind's going to the fact that you're going to have this father thinking that he's drinking everything out of the minibar. Mm-hmm. And the fact that never got addressed to me was a like big question mark. Mm-hmm. And I was like, and I was, before I found out obviously how the plot turned out, I was like, well, that's going to be a plot hole I'm circling. But then, of course, it's that it is part of the scheme, so it then makes sense why he didn't get in trouble. But it definitely is that spark for the viewer of, like, what's going on?
Yeah, I know.
Something's not quite right.
Exactly. Oh, that kid's in. And again, it's one of those conventional... In a conventional movie, the kid would have come into the room. The father would have been there, hands on hips, going, what are you doing? You're drinking. And he would have been, which would have furthered the bond between him and Jason Bateman because, you know, he's opposite the dad. But that didn't happen. Mm-hmm. And I was like, he's not in trouble?
Yeah,
what's going on here? So cleverly
for the most
played.
Part, I'd say that they were good at keeping us just behind.
Yeah.
Rather than ahead.
Yeah, and
which
I didn't.
Is nice.
Yeah, it is. It's a preference. Actually, it's a pleasure to be
right. And again, like, regardless of the bad words, I wasn't as offended. Like I said, there was that one scene where I was like, oh my god, I can't believe they're going there with the girl in the ketchup packet. And it's just the way he's like, and he was like, well, congratulations. He goes, you've just made it into womanhood. Womanhood. He was like, oh, this is fantastic. You should be celebrating this right now.
Just think it's hilarious that Dooji is, with all the bad words. And you focus on the one event that doesn't have, like, any bad words.
No.
But that's such an ironic thing. It's wonderful.
I like the way he plays with people's minds, too, especially during that scene. Because those are all the thoughts that go through a woman's head when that happens. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, it's
a new woman,
it's so realistic. It's sad that, like, we shouldn't be laughing at
not at all. It's just like, but don't worry. You can scoot up you know, I'm sure.
We're not in front of nationally televised.
Right. And then seeing the parents are like, what is going on? Like, what?
It's such a long walk up to the mic.
Yeah.
I was waiting for that shot where, you know, it's in photo and then it's like.
And I was just wondering, like, are we actually going to see a ketchup? Like, are they didn't go that far.
They didn't need to.
And I was like, you know, but it was just, and again, like, the other kid was, the Asian kid that he rattles. He goes, give these back to your mom. She's, you know.
She was very kind.
She's very kind.
She held me up. Wonderful.
And the way he says it was just like,
you
got to
get into their mind, man. Yeah. You got to jerk them around.
And he was great at it, you know. Your chair's crying out for help. Help.
Don't look at me. Don't look at me.
Don't look at me. So, yeah.
It's a very quotable movie. I will give it that. Like, definitely there's some things.
Well, it's all dialogue. So, yeah.
I'm going to be saying, don't look at me for a long
time. Don't look at me. People don't look at me already.
Okay, we're walking. All right. Oh, now we're running.
What?
Don't look at me.
Okay, all righty. Well, there you go. That was a wonderful movie.
It was. I mean, again, for a comedy.
No, but I mean, I'll tell you this. When they're in the bath, in the shower, and he leans out the shower, goes, is that easier? Yeah.
What is going on here? And the mere fact that you get him to do it, like he gets it.
Exactly.
And, you know.
All right.
It's just funny. I'm curious as to whether or not he'll do like a commentary when it comes time for Blu-ray.
I hope so.
Because, you know, it could be very interesting.
I don't know why he wouldn't. It's his first directorial debut.
Yeah.
I think that there was, I mean, and I don't mean to sound nitpicky, but I've been a part of spelling bees and stuff, but there are rules that you have to do when you're doing it. Like, when you're given a word to spell, you have to say the word out loud, then spell it, then repeat the word again to be considered correct. And then the kids did it correctly, but when Guy would go up, he would just say the word and it would still be correct. And so just those little things, the inaccuracies of what a real spelling bee is like. Yeah.
I think that that's a very good point, because that's something that we are I feel like is very familiar to people to hear. It's like that resolution of like blah blah blah, you know, it's that final. What I like that changed about that is that he was doing it just so quickly, and then I think that with deleting the repetition, it made the pacing work well.
Sure.
It was different and obviously in a way inaccurate, but I think that for the pacing and the attitude of the character, I think that that works.
It's a good point on the pacing, but then we also saw the repetition of the kids always asking for origins or definitions.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that.
Those are real things you can ask during spelling bee, but we saw that a lot, and I thought that was very repetitive.
It was. You know, I just figured, okay, so the Golden Quill has different rules, and I just, whatever.
Yeah.
I just loved how they thought they were going to stump him on the word. Like, they'd look at the word, and he'd go out there, and he'd spell it. And then they go, you are correct. And they throw the mic down.
I liked how they would sometimes sync up the words with what was going on the characters.
Yeah. I would have loved to have known some of the definitions. There's a few words. Like, what's that subtext for? I can't know.
It was wonderful. And like, they did a good job of sometimes pointing it out and calling the attention to it and sometimes just letting it play. Like, especially, obviously, when the kid has the words that are very reflective of the situation with his mother. And that one's very obvious. Mm-hmm. Or, like, when they have his word and he gets called out for it. Also very obvious. Mm-hmm. But then you have, like, the little kid who gets the word that means something along the lines of, like, not developed yet. And you're like, oh, I'm glad they're not making too much fun of those ones.
Like, the last word that he won on, I don't even remember, but I'm going, okay, what does that mean? What is it? Because I figured it would have
and
some sort of
they did such a nice job of that meaning. And that's why I was like, I was trying to find just a word list from this movie and I couldn't find it yet, so
I couldn't find it.
That'll be special features.
I thought the one that really stood out was that I forget because of such a big word, but then the lady in the audience actually was like, I know what that means, that's what you are.
I thought that
was really well done.
That was very funny.
Yeah,
definitely.
Are you calling me what did it mean? It was
Or
slovenly or something. Yeah,
I liked that nougat. Somebody's dirty.
Nougat. I know. Like, nougat. What?
I thought that was hilarious.
Oh my God.
But you know, it makes me want to. I don't know. Maybe it's the nerd in me. I just want to kind of look up in the dictionary. Like, are these real words? I kind of believe that they are.
Yeah,
I can guarantee you, it is the nerd in me.
They are real words.
Yeah, but I would say that they probably would be. You know, and. You know, it was the other thing I was thinking about too is that, you know, this past year, although two smaller movies have, you know, are already on my list as being some of my favorites of the year, and you know,
I'm guessing The Spectacular Now.
No, that was last year. Grand Budapest and this movie I really enjoyed, you know, a lot. But then we saw a movie last night, you know, which I'm sure we'll talk about at some point very soon. that I really loved, but that's a big movie. But it was just nice that this movie sort of kind of comes out of nowhere. It's a very small movie. It's not, like we said, it's not going to go over 1,000 screens, and I don't know how much longer it's going to last. And Grand Budapest has built its thing, but it's not going to go commercially wide.
I would argue, though, that Grand Budapest is definitely excelling to that point. I think that that's one of those indie movies that has somehow made it become mainstream or trending.
Yeah,
or whatnot.
But also Grand Budapest, directed by, Wes Anderson. Right. He has a building. He already has that following over years. Jason Bateman, as an actor, it has probably a following from fans and his acting, but as a directing.
Absolutely. But one's like a Fox Searchlight or whatever. Yeah. You know, they're smaller movies compared to Divergent or.
Yes.
And listen, 4.1 mil for thus far for Bad Words, I don't think is necessarily too bad if the budget was under 10. I mean, I don't exactly know what that means. That could literally mean 9.9 in studio speak.
Right.
And they can say, hey, we're under 10. So, you know, I don't see much foreign in it or what they'll do with, the ancillary markets like when it goes to on demand and Blu-ray. But 4.1 for a movie that's on less than 1,000 screens or 142 locations, that's not too bad at this point. I like how they rolled it out. I've liked how, I've liked their marketing. Like I said, the Red Band trailer was what did it for me. It just hooked me. And I'm like, I'm going to like this movie. I just love that acerbic kind of humor.
All right. Well, I think we've reached the gamut.
I think so. I think we talked about everything.
Last words?
Overall, because I didn't want to go see this movie and then had watched it, it was actually very entertaining, very smart, and very dialogue-driven, and I thought that was so well done, and I wasn't expecting that.
Mm-hmm. Dimitri?
Bad Words is a very great, surprising, very funny comedy. Perhaps not for the meek of heart, but, it takes a lot to offend me, and Bad Words don't offend me. In fact, I've said it before, Bad Words make me laugh, and this had a lot of bad words. So I was laughing a lot.
I'm just going to go with...
For those who are only listening, she's just flipped us off.
I did what? What are you talking about?
Well, I can't say anything better than that. Thank you very much, Sarah, for putting the exclamation point on it.
I'll try. I'll do what I can.
All right, very much. Where is it that people can write in for us?
You can follow us on iTunes and website.
AnatomyOfMovie.com.
iTunes on iTunes. And then on Twitter at Movie Anatomy.
Wonderful, right, so there's your Anatomy and Movie for Bad Words.
And get people to, as Phil said, the viewer.
You're the viewer.
Comment.
Watch us.
We will pay attention to what you say. And we will. I will pay attention to what you say and I'll write you
back. Sarah is not going to.
I don't have a Twitter.
I don't have a Twitter either.
All right, before this it devolves into something even worse. I want to say thank you very much for listening. On behalf of Marissa Saravini, Dimitri Pano, Sarah Stretton, I'm John Comerford, saying thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.
Bye.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the rest of the Anatomy of a Movie staff, we would like to thank you for listening and subscribing to the show. If you have any questions or comments, feel free to email or tweet us. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been Anatomy of a Movie.
Thanks for watching Anatomy of a Movie on YouTube. For more on your favorite movies, subscribe to our channel here, and be sure to let us know what you think in our comment section below here. Bye.